Hello, my name is Julie Schroeder, and today I will be interviewing George Schroeder about bookstores and their importance to history. The first question I would like to ask you is, what was the bookstore that you worked in, and how did it improve the community you lived in?
Well, I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania, and the bookstore that we'll talk about that I worked in and visited from my teenage years until even today was called Farley's New Delaware Bookstore. And the bookstore that I worked in, before I worked there, there's a backstory to why that store was important to me and why I sought out to work there. For one thing is, in my family when I grew up, books were kind of our friends. We didn't throw them away. They brought back memories of stories we had read or stories my parents had read to us or things we had learned in school. My sister worked in a bookstore in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And then I later worked in one in New Hope. And for me, the reason I chose to work in the bookstore and what it meant to our community is, one, it was a meeting point. It's where people came in together. It's where political groups met. It's where people would come to read their own writings. It's where more famous people would come and do readings. It's where book clubs met. It was a place where you can browse and reflect. It was a fun place to go on a cold day and just look around and get ideas, or on a cold snowy day or a super hot summer day. It was a nice refuge for me.
Okay. And where did you work and when?
I worked in Farley's New Delaware Bookstore, which is on South Main Street in a little town called New Hope, Pennsylvania. It is right on the border with New Jersey. It's a fairly well-known artist colony, famous for its playwrights, its authors, its artists, visual artists, as well as one extremely famous woodworker named George Nakashima. All of these people would come into our bookstore.
Oh, that's very interesting. Then tell me about New Hope and how Farley's fit into the town's landscape.
Well, Farley's was family-owned. It was founded by Mr. Farley, who was a local Democratic political leader who was a much better bookstore owner than he was a candidate for election. He never won election. And it was right on South Main Street next to the Bucks County Playhouse and several artistry stores, jewelry makers, and small restaurants. Behind us was the Delaware River, and just south of us was where George Washington had crossed the Delaware. So the town was steeped in both history and culture, and all of that came together in the bookstore.
You said it was an artist town. Tell me about the customers and the people who worked there.
Yes, we would have, for example, we had two authors in our town. Anyone who's familiar with the Berenstain Bears books, the children's books, both authors, husband and wife, and actually their son also was an illustrator. They lived in New Hope, and they would come in almost every Saturday or Saturday night. We would see them. They would come to town. They would go to the theater. They would go to a restaurant, and like a lot of people in New Hope, they would cap their evening by coming into Farley's. Some of them would bring a glass of wine with them, and they would just look around. We were open till midnight, which was unusual for a bookstore, and I was always on the night shift with Christopher Ross, an Englishman who was also an author himself. So we would get, and as the night went on, it got a little crazier because the bars would be open and people would come in. We had one young man who came in, and he always read Nietzsche in the corner, the philosopher, bring his own copy, and he would highlight the book, and I got to know him, and he highlighted every sentence of the book. So we had some crazy characters. It was one of the first openly gay and lesbian towns in Pennsylvania. So we had, given it was an artist colony, we had a lot of colorful characters from that persuasion that would come in. And it really fit into the town in the sense that the town was a cultural place, and books and bookstores were kind of the center of that culture. So people would come in, look for plays. They would come in and just roam the aisles looking for what they didn't even know they were looking for.
Around what time did you work at the bookstore? What year?
It was in 1984 and early 1985. I knew Mr. Farley because he had run for state representative in Pennsylvania, and I was at the time working on the days I didn't work in the bookstore, I worked for a local congressman in his campaign. So it was the mid-1980s. It was before internet, it was before cell phones, really it was before computers, and there was no instant gratification. People would come in and say, hey, I heard about a book on this subject, and you know, it was our job to try to be the people who tried to figure out what they were searching for with only a few clues.
What did Farley's bookstore look on the inside? Was it a typical bookstore where it was neat and there was small aisles, or what did it look like?
Farley's, when I was growing up, before I ever knew there was Farley's, there was a little bookstore in our hometown of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. It was a used bookstore. Piles and piles of books. The smell of must. You had the heft of the books. You lift them up looking for things. There was, you know, there's the tactile sense to a bookstore that we've lost now that we've gone to a digital age. And Farley's was a lot like that. And I think that was one of the things that attracted me to it. Farley's was an old building, two levels. It was a former residence. It had creaky wood floors. It had high stacks like a library filled with books, a little bit on the disheveled side. It was the owner would work upstairs, and that's where he ordered the books. The ground floor was ceiling to floor books. Crammed all together in different sections. There was some order to it, but not much, and I think that's what the customers liked, because they would walk down an aisle and they'd see something that they didn't even know they were coming in to look for, and maybe would purchase it.
So it wasn't organized the same way a library would be?
Not exactly the same as a library. There was no Dewey Decimal System. It was organized roughly by category. So we had literature, and within the literature section it was organized alphabetically, and then we would have a science fiction corner. We had a children's book room in the back, and it's where all the Berenstain Bears books were. We had a kind of a do-it-yourself section for, you know, how to do electrical repairs. We had a philosophy section. We had a poetry section. We had magazines, which was a lot of work because those came in and out. Books always stayed. Magazines came in and out. And then we had a history section, history and politics. And finally, we had the visual arts books.
Mm. Were all of the books new?
Not all the books were new. There was a section that of older books. It was a smaller section. But I particularly liked the older section because you would just, they were so old. These were books from the 1800s, 1700s in a few cases, not particularly rare, but the artistry of the books from the older era was so different from modern books in that, you know, the spine would have a tactile sense to it. It would be raised. You know, books were made to be cherished and passed down in the 1800s and earlier, so it was an art to it. So you had people who would sew the books together. You would have the printed media. The drawings on the inside were different. They were more less mass produced. Actually, it was a printing press, but it wasn't mass produced. You could see the stitching on the interior of the binders. And we had one person would come in and teach a class in bookbinding, which I thought was interesting. The old art of how to make a book and how to repair an older book.
What duties did you have in the store?
We kind of went with the rhythm of the day. So in the slower afternoon hours, I would stock the books. I would make sure that they were somewhat organized. I would take any of the in the morning we would get in all the magazines, and I would have to account for the ones that didn't sell and send them back to the manufacturer and restock the shelves of books and newspapers that we had. Newspapers would sell out every day, and they came in first thing in the morning. Books were a slower section, so we would make sure they were stocked. We would order books for people who came in. We had a way of searching by what's called the ISBN number for books, or by title, or kind of what would be now considered a primitive search database. So that was early in the day, and the later in the day it would be engaging with the customers, which was the fun part, because you never knew what you would get, particularly late at night when people would have had a couple glasses of wine or more and come in. We had a few borderline mentally stable people who came in every night. Christopher was a real character, Englishman, dressed in a disheveled manner. He's married to a doctor, so he didn't really have to make money. And he was busy writing his book on the American Civil War, or a murder mystery that's set in the American Civil War. So it was the bookstore attracted an eclectic group of people that it kept you on your toes.
Did you ever buy any of the books that were sold?
I probably bought too many of the books. My family probably would say I bought too many of the books, but it was, you know, wandering around the stacks that I found authors like Zora Neale Hurston. I found poets that I never heard of, and I found to-do books on how to, do woodworking that later became a hobby. So yes, I bought quite a few books there at a discount since I was an employee.
How busy would you say? How many customers would go in and out every day, would you say?
On the weekends, the store could have, and it was small, could have 50, 60 people in it at one time. We often would have, we'd have a line of four or five or six people deep just at the front register buying books. Earlier in the day, it was a slower pace. Evenings, when we made most of our sales, evenings and weekends. So I would work the evenings and the weekends as well as some of the earlier shifts.
So it was pretty common for people to come after the bar to go buy books?
It was very common to come after the theater, because the theater would let out around 9, 9:30, and there were bars and restaurants. So there was a lot of kind of date night restaurants. So couples, we had a lot of couples who would come in, and they would go, they would have dinner, they'd walk around, they'd walk along the river, walk across the bridge into Lambertville, which is the town across the river in New Jersey, and Farley's and an ice cream shop up the road were always the stops. And then for the workers and us, we'd work there. We kind of flip it. We would go down to John and Peter's Blues Bar after work. We'd listen to fairly well known singers and blues singers and jazz singers. When we closed up at 11:30 or midnight.
You mentioned one of the workers was writing a book himself.
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
That was Christopher, and Christopher lived down near Washington's Crossing. He was a British national. He was about in his 40s. He unfortunately passed away before he finished his book from a heart attack, but I would help Christopher on his research. He was researching a book on a murder, a true life murder, on a street in Washington, D.C. that no longer existed, called Half Street. And the bookstore actually had some old maps that we would look at, and we work on slower days. We'd work together on some of the historical details. I even went, when I later worked in Washington, D.C., I went down to Washington and I went into the Library of Congress and pulled up what's called microfiche, which is kind of photographs of each page of a newspaper. I did research for him on what life was like in the months surrounding the murder in 1864. All those photostats, photocopies of the, and it's on a reel, so it's tactile, like a bookstore is in so many ways. And you would just reel the microfiche until you got to the day you needed, and you were just jumping back in time. That's one of the things I like about bookstores, is you can jump back in time to a period you've never been. My interest in travel started in bookstores, or you can jump forward with science fiction.
It's very true. What would you say people are missing out from the lack of bookstores we have today? And what's different?
I think one of the things that people miss out from now is the journey. Bookstores certainly aren't efficient. It's not a straight path when you go in. It's more like a meandering river. And you may go off on a tributary and end up buying something you never, or looking at something you never expected you were going to look at. The great bookstores are like that. Strand Bookstore in New York City has, I think, 7 stories of books, miles and miles of books. And I can recall going in there and just spending hours and not even realizing I'd spent hours. Or City Lights in San Francisco. All great towns are known, have some kind of an anchor bookstore. And what was the question again?
What are you missing out on?
What are you
today?
Missing out on? You're missing, there's a bit of, the internet is great. You can get your answers right away. But the journey is what you're missing. It's the, there's the hunt for the information, the creativity even perhaps. You may get to the same place that you do now. It did take more time in a bookstore or in a library, but you might pick up more on, along the way. A bookstore is not supposed to be fast or efficient, but on a cold, rainy day, you go in there and you kind of get lost in your own thoughts. And I think that's something that's missing now. Just the tactile sense of, the heft of a book, the camaraderie of a bookstore. You run into neighbors and friends, you might talk over a book. You don't get that from the internet. There's something about the paper and the smell that I think is nice. It's better than Amazon.com, although Amazon.com is easy. It's fun to go in there. It's just holding a book, I think, is something we're missing now. And you're surrounded by ideas that spur creativity. Not that the internet isn't or ebooks are not, but it's like the news in that you look for what you want, but you don't know what else is out there outside of what you're looking for.
It's very true. I'd like to thank you for spending the time to be interviewed today.
Thank you for interviewing me.